Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. Let us begin with, I say this constantly when he's on the air with us, and he is our good friend, Sylvain Charlebois, Professor Sylvain Charlebois, who is, of course, from Dalhousie University in Nova Scotia, Halifax, where he's also the director of its agri-foods laboratory. And I have a lot of respect for Sylvain because he calls it like it is. He says what's on his mind, and he's not afraid to do so. But he also pointed out in the about the column that he did, the op-ed he did that appeared in the Toronto Sun, that and it was debating the path to carbon pricing. Professor Charlebois said that on X, that academics who aren't fully vested or have full professorships may be committing intellectual, or at least not intellectual, I'm sorry, career suicide by writing an op-ed like this. Sylvain continued, intellectual freedom exists on campus as long as you fit in. Professor, how are you doing?
You forgot to mention that fit in was quoted, quote unquote.
Why? What's
fitting
that again?
Fitting in means a lot.
What was that? I'm sorry, I missed what you said. What was that?
Well, I mean, basically, and this has been going on for decades. This is not new. I mean, if you walk on campus, you have to be careful. If I'm of the mind that businesses play a very important role in our economy, I do believe in market failures. I believe in market forces. But that kind of language on campuses, you got to be careful, especially right now with discussions around climate change. And many, many of my colleagues will see businesses as a problem. I don't see business as a problem. I don't see farmers or food processors as a problem. I see them as part of the solution. And so it's been very difficult for some of us to be honest on campus. So, of course, there is social media, and I try to be as honest as possible on social media, but I do pay the price. I mean, I do get, from time to time, nasty emails, and I'm sure you do as well, Roy.
But, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And frankly, even on X, publicly, very openly, I see colleagues calling me names. And it's not just me. I mean, it's other people as well who would be in agreement with some of the things I say. So the attacks go one way. But if you dare criticize anything that colleagues that would be, say, pro-carbon tax would say, then you're up against a mob. A real, very aggressive mob.
Yeah, the carbon tax is really a flashpoint in this country
absolutely. Right
now, because there's been so many different routes chosen by the politicians, and particularly the liberals, who introduced the carbon tax and manage it. There have been so many different routes taken, and really, I think a majority of people are looking at the tax and saying, okay, we know why it's there, really. It's there for you to be able to generate whatever level of support you can wherever you need it at particular points in time when the carbon tax is convenient to you, i.e. where you are in Atlantic Canada, Sylvain.
Yep, absolutely. We need to give some credit to the Conservatives here. They actually brought forward the debate itself. I've always felt that since 2015, Canadians have actually been sleepwalking through this carbon tax policy, and I've always believed that there are other ways to do this, especially for Canada, given the resources and the knowledge that we have. Now, Mr. Poilievre has politicized the issue as much as Mr. Trudeau has, but at least we're talking about this issue. It's a very important issue. Some people actually believe, some people who are probably listening to us right now, they actually believe that reducing emissions is not a necessity. Now, I don't agree with that view, but I do believe that we need to do something. But there are other ways to tackle climate change, as far as I'm concerned. Climate change is something that farmers and the ag industry has been dealing with for decades. This is not new. I mean, they're doing some great work that needs to be recognized. But none of it is being recognized right now. It's all about penalizing emissions and nothing else.
Yep. It's a punitive tax. And really, people have recognized that, and that's the way they see it. By the way, talking about response to you, I just received an email from Adam, and it says, go Sylvan. There you go.
What did he say?
That's all it says. Go Sylvan. He's on your side.
Wow.
This is from
great.
Adam.
I mean, very rarely people will take the time to write something in support of some of the things that that we say or the work that we do. The open letter that was sent out a few weeks ago really frustrated me because I knew exactly who wrote it. I know exactly why it was written. I know exactly why it was sent out at the time that it was sent out. I know exactly who's funding all this. And I had to say something, which is why I wrote the open letter this week about the letter. I think Canadians need to be extremely careful with how they see the endorsement of 340 so-called economists, because some of them are not even economists, by the way. But I know exactly why this was done. The Department of Environment and Climate Change Canada is purposely poking NGOs and, of course, academics to get some support publicly, because right now they know that the carbon tax is failing. And because of its failure, more and more people believe that, well, no, reducing emissions is just not worth it. And that's a dangerous place to be.
Yeah, I was going to take a break, but you kind of put the kibosh on that one, because I can't break when we've got the information that we need to talk about. But in your column you wrote, your op-ed, over 340 economists have penned an open letter to support of Canada's prevailing carbon tax policy. And you go on to say, despite the misleading information noted in the letter regarding the carbon tax's impact on our climate and its effect on our cost of living, specifically referencing the Bank of Canada's erroneous calculations. That scares the hell out of me when the Bank of Canada can't work a calculator. It's kind of important that they get the numbers right. The group certainly has the right to express its viewpoint. Is it a viewpoint, or is it an endorsement of a policy because they're afraid if they don't endorse it, the money will dry up?
Absolutely. It was partisan for sure. I mean, there are two really big mistakes in that letter. One, assuming that the carbon tax is actually working and reducing emissions. So in the letter, it mentions that since 2019, emissions have actually gone down by 8%. So first of all, that 8% comes from the database that is run by Environment Climate Change Canada, and it goes from 2019 to 2021. Well, guess what happened in 2020? The world stopped with the pandemic. Of course, emissions actually dropped. And by the way, it's not 8%, it's 7.4%. They rounded it up to 8%. And two, the Bank of Canada's calculations only include three components of the CPI: natural gas, gasoline, and heating oil. That's it. Everything else is excluded from that 0.6% they actually came out with, that is often cited by Mr. Guilbeault and Mr. Trudeau themselves. So we got to be careful with these assumptions. And I thought that letter was reckless, suggesting to Canadians that the carbon tax is working for the environment, and of course, it's not compromising our cost of living either.
So eventually,
those two assumptions are not true.
Here's another email from Jeanette, and she sends it to me and to you. She starts, I guess this is to me. Thank you for being on the air and talking to us, the listeners and commentaries. I am sure more and more are in support with Sylvain Charlevoix's efforts and commentary to the public. You go, Sylvain. And then she says, you go too, Roy. I'm not sure quite how she means that. Whether you go, Sylvain, and I should just go, or whether she's complimenting both of us, I'm not sure. I don't know. So Pete writes two words, Sylvain rocks. And then Anne writes, I continue to love your show, Roy. You're the most fantastic broadcaster. Honestly, that's a keeper. Thank you. And let me see. Doug in Calgary. Go Roy and Sylvain. Go behind you 100%. So it's really nice to hear that.
Nice. Yes. Yeah.
So I want to, there's something I want to play for you too, but I have to get it to your, I have to get it to your op-ed. You wrote, while carbon tax advocates profess a willingness to consider alternative policies, if supported by empirical evidence, Canada's delay in furnishing a thorough mathematical rationale for the current carbon tax policy is causing public impatience. There's a growing demand for a definitive, measurable basis that proves the policy's efficiency in curbing emissions without stunting economic growth. And you added, acknowledging the considerable efforts of the agri-food industry in diminishing its carbon footprint is crucial. With Canada's abundant natural resources, the nation is in an excellent position to spearhead the creation of a global carbon market mechanism. So in two or three sentences, what are you telling us there? There's a lot of big words.
Yeah, so first of all, I've seen signatories of the letter saying, well, if there is another model out there, we'd love to see the evidence that it could work. Well, we're still waiting for any evidence that this particular approach is working. There's nothing. Even Mr. Guilbeault himself said that they're not even trying to measure how the carbon tax is impacting the environment at all. That's one thing. Secondly, some people believe that Canada is already carbon neutral, and I think there's some merit to that claim, considering that we sequestrate a lot of carbon because of our forests and our system, and that's why I think that cap and trade could be another model. But cap and trade will only work if the approach is global, not local, not national, global. And I actually think that Canada is poised to do very well as a champion of cap and trade for the entire world, not just for Canada. So instead, right now, what we're seeing is a government penalizing entrepreneurship, penalizing innovation. And we're seeing the numbers. We're all seeing the economic numbers right now. And if we continue to put more pressure on businesses, they will leave.
Have you got that that clip ready? From no, that's just too long. Can't play it now. I just wanted to find out if you'd gotten the apology from Guilbeault yet.
I'm not holding my breath.
Okay.
So have you ever heard any cabinet ministers from the current government apologize for anything?
No. No.
That's right.
No. So. Thanks for today. We have a lot more to talk about. I'm going to drag you back into this forum next weekend, if you don't mind.
No problem, Roy.
Okay, thanks, Sylvain.
Well, you take care.
All the best
Bye-bye.
To you. If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.